board members, can you, is Kate Hoff in? Yes. Kurt Jacobson, lot 90. Michael Jordanson. Present.
Here.
Jeff Collins.
Here.
Thomas.
Here.
Dan Wirt.
He's here.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Kevin Poole.
I'm here.
All accounted for.
And I'll just take the agenda off of the, or the rest of the members off of the screen. So we don't need to go through all of them.
This is Dan. Can you hear me?
We can, Dan.
Yes.
All right.
Kate, do you want to lead us in prayer?
Sure. Our dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for this wonderful day. We're thankful for the opportunity to meet together as a board and to plan our upcoming events. We're thankful, Father, for the moisture we received. That was greatly needed. We're thankful for all that we have, and we ask that that will be with us to make good decisions and to be able to guide the ranch in its operation and do the best for the members. These things we ask in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Okay, I can take the agenda if you want me to do that, Kurt.
Yeah, if you want to go forward with minutes.
Minutes, yeah, not agenda, your agenda, minutes. So I sent out July minutes, and then I just sent out the August minutes and the annual member meeting. We won't approve the annual member meeting, but I wanted to just let you guys know that it was out there, see if you had any comments or feedback before I posted it to the website. The August minutes just essentially list the people that resigned in the August meeting and then indicate that no action was taken, the meeting wasn't really held. And then the July minutes were prepared by Barry before he resigned. So maybe start with the July minutes. Are there any updates or changes to the July minutes that people want to present or members?
I don't know if everybody's gotten it.
The July minutes?
Yes.
They were sent with, or a couple Jeff, times previously.
Jeff commented on a potential change.
I didn't see the comment. In an email?
Yes. He replied to the minutes email. Barry wrote the minutes, so I think it's a safe assumption that it was what he was thinking.
I guess that's kind of my confusion as to what the minutes are actually supposed to capture, what somebody's thinking or what somebody's saying.
Fair enough.
Do you want to change it to after the board passed the new rule, adding a penalty for a rule? Jeff made a formal request to remove 4.02 as a rule. Yeah, so just so the rest of the board's kind of aware where that came from, as there was confusion with that previous board as to whether the adding their change to the Rule 24, or adding that Rule 24, allowed 4.02 to be voted on, or if it was just Rule 24. So the modifications that were made were discussed with Barry, and he accepted that scenario. But to Jeff's point, We don't know what necessarily what he was thinking or what everybody else was thinking. Some people were thinking we're just talking about 4.02, but Barry was thinking that he was referring to 24. So I think that's where Jeff's kind of trying to make the clarification there.
Sally just noted that we should the minutes should just be about the facts of the meeting, and
I have no objections to the thing.
Yeah, I have no objections to the meeting. I have no idea what went on then.
I don't see a substantial difference, so I would tend to go with what Barry has written. So I make the motion that we approve the July meeting minutes as Barry wrote them.
I'll second that.
Kurt, you need to unmute and call for a vote.
Can we get a vote?
Or say all in favor?
Kevin
all
Poole.
In favor, say aye.
Kevin Poole, 64, aye.
Dan Wirt, aye.
Kate Hoff, aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Thomas LeClaire, aye.
Jeff Collins, nay.
And Kurt Jacobson, aye.
Okay. I recognize I sent out the August meeting minutes a little bit late, but is there any modifications or changes or updates to the August one? Hopefully you guys got those this morning.
I have no updates for a meeting that didn't really occur.
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to have something in the block so that people could know it didn't occur.
I understand.
Okay, I'll make a motion to, I guess not really minutes, but a motion to post that into the website just so that they're available so people know what happened for August.
I'll second the motion.
Aye.
All in favor say aye.
Dan Wirt, aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Kevin Poole, present.
Thomas LeClaire, aye.
Jeff, I didn't hear yours.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I can hear you now. You said aye, but
we can't hear you, but we're reading your lips.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, now I can hear you. We're good there.
Okay, and I'll get an eye on that.
And then, so all I except for Kevin did present. And then annual member meeting, these, again, just post them to the website. If there's
hang
any
on, Cade, hang on. Before you move on, somebody has their hand raised. Do we want to address that now, or do you want to continue? It may have to do with the minutes, which is why I'm asking. Yep. Kurt, do you want to continue or do you want to?
I want to continue.
All right. So we'll hold on questions until we're done with the meeting minutes.
Okay, then annual member meeting. So, again, I just kind of documented the annual member meeting. This won't be approved by us, but I wanted approval to post it out to the website so that then it can be reviewed and then it'll be voted on in the next annual member meeting. So make a motion to approve posting that to the website.
I second the motion.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thomas LeClaire, aye.
Kate Hoff, aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Kevin Poole, aye.
Jacob Collins, aye.
Kurt Jacobson, aye. Dan?
Dan Wirt, aye.
We all agreed.
Mm-hmm. Unanimous. How about that?
Okay. Thanks. That's all I had for the minutes. Kurt, do we want to go back to Robert or?
Yes, we can go back to Robert.
Did you mean to raise your hand, Robert? If so, you need to come off mute.
I think he stepped away because he was on camera previously. Oh, there he is.
He's on mute.
No, he's dropped.
He dropped.
Oh.
He clicked the leave button instead of the unmute button.
Well, if he comes back and raises his hand, we can go back to him.
Yes.
Yeah. Kate, what is item 3?
So I'll just see if there's any additions or modifications to the agenda and approve the agenda as it's written. So it's...
Yes.
I approve the agenda
as it's written. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to make the motion that discussion regarding a law firm to represent the DSROA for collections and other matters be deferred to the November board meeting.
I don't see that as an item on the agenda.
No, it's not. But this was advertised as a place to make such a motion if something was not on the agenda.
So you're proposing that that be added to the agenda next time? Or deferred? Or whatever you want to...
Right. That discussion regarding a law firm to represent the DSROA for collections and other matters be deferred to the November board meeting.
So basically, if we agree to that, you're stating that we wouldn't be able to discuss that if anybody else proposed it as an option, but okay. And that's regarding employing, right, a law firm. Can you repeat your actual verbiage, Dan, real quick?
All right.
Discussions regarding...
Discussion regarding a law firm to represent the DSROA for collections and other matters be deferred to the November board meeting.
So, just for members understanding a little bit of context there, Barry Clarkson has decided to no longer represent DSROA for collections and has sent us a notice as such, and we have to find another firm to represent us to collect past due dues and whatever else, and we're just deferring that discussion until next month.
Thanks, Michael, for that clarification.
I will second that motion.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Thomas Cook, aye.
Dan Wirt, aye.
Kate Hoff, aye.
Kurt Jacobson, aye.
Kevin Poole, aye.
Okay, any changes to the agenda as presented or any additions? I make a motion that we approve the agenda as written.
I'll second the motion.
Aye.
Kate Hoff.
Aye.
Kevin Poole, aye.
Dan Wirt, aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Jeff, is your mic working?
Yes.
Okay.
Was that yes or aye?
Aye, both.
So we're going to move forward and give it to Michael Jordison for the Treasurer's Report.
Oh, I don't have too much to report.
Good, because we're 6 minutes behind.
Basically everything is in the P&L that's sent out. I did briefly get into QuickBooks and look at a few things. Nothing substantial. I have not made it or have access to the bank account yet. I can log in, but I don't actually see any accounts. I have some totals from QuickBooks, but these are not always up to date compared to what's in the actual account. In our main account, Operating account is $119,548.94. You know, we do have $15,731 in savings. In the asset replacement fund, $6,190, and I'm not doing the pennies, so there are 10 revert labeled as reserve fund CDs. I don't have an actual total on it because I didn't add them up. Each one is $10,000 or more. I'm guessing it's roughly $107,000, anyway, it's over $100,000 in reserve funds. Other than that, are there any questions for me on the P&L?
We'll take that as a no.
That got us ahead of schedule.
Is Cody Allred on?
He was supposed to be. I don't know if he got the Zoom, though. Now that I think about it, we might have to postpone that one for a minute.
Oh, okay, so are you going to take the lead on that?
Well, I'll try and get a hold of him real quick because I don't have a report for him, and so we might need to just move to the open forum and then come back.
Okay.
I'll text him real quick and see if I can get a hold of him.
Is he at HQ?
I believe he is.
My Starlink has been a little fluttery through
the weather.
Yeah, with the weather, so he may be down.
Okay.
Yeah, he may not have power.
Yeah, he may not have power.
We did give him a generator, so he should be able to run that, but we'll find out.
Okay. Hey, move on to...
So let's move on to the open forum. 2-3 minutes per person. Limit topics to feedback or questions on the agenda items. Close. I can open closed topics individually for discussion. If something gets out of hand, we're going to have to table it and figure out how we're going to approach it. So does anybody have any comments they'd like to add at this point to the board? Anyone?
Kind of put a little bit out there, too. We should have included all of the contracts that we're discussing, the ranch manager position, bids for the battery. So, you know, hopefully we gave you guys enough information to ask any questions or
We'd like your input before we have discussion on these items.
Correct.
Hello.
So I was just wondering, do we have the job descriptions for each board member as what you guys are doing for your items?
Yeah, we'll go with that as part of the update to the board responsibilities.
Okay. That was just my question. So if you're going to address that, then that's fine.
I didn't hear the question clearly.
She was just wondering if we had come up with what everybody, the roles and responsibilities for everybody, which we did on our last meeting.
And we'll be going over that.
Another question? I do. We're echoing.
Yeah, you both can't have your mics on, Tina.
Yeah. I don't know how to do that.
So Jeff needs to turn off his volume, I guess, on one of them.
How about that?
That's better.
Does that work?
Yep.
But then you have your... Are you?
I can hear you talking.
Okay. My question is, the ranch house last year, when we turned the ranch house, we ran out of time and money to do a laundry hookup installation. It's, I don't see that on the agenda as a topic to talk about the ranch house. Since there's a little bit in the ranch house budget and we have the time, can we install laundry hookup in the ranch house while it's empty?
So we've already decided that as a new agenda. Yeah, that should have been a new agenda item, but I would recommend we put it as a proposal and then we can add it to the agenda next time. But, Kurt, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's exactly what I was going to bring up.
I'm going to contradict both of you. That's a normal course of business action that we can approve or disapprove outside of this meeting. We are the board. We are to conduct business for DSROA, and that's something that we can just discuss and approve. So, Tina, please send us at least from a treasury's perspective, please send us a cost analysis, time frame, and then we can discuss it.
Okay.
You're the president, Kurt, so you can override this. But
no, I'm 100%. You just added to what Kate and I just said, so I think that's perfect. Is that good with you, Tina?
So come up with a cost
analysis.
We're having trouble with this.
I'm flat-footed on this because I don't know anything. I don't know anything about this project.
Okay, so come up with receipts for parts and send them to you.
Not receipts.
No.
Propose cost of what it's going to be and the scope of the work to be done.
If that's something,
the time frame that it's going to be done in.
Yeah, if that's something, guests over cabins, if we can just get a proposed cost, when the work will be completed, is it going under contract with somebody? Are you guys doing the work? Just so that we have an outline of not just, hey, this work needs to be done, but here's how we're going to do it, and here's what it's going to cost us. And then we can say yay or nay, and it doesn't have to be in a meeting because that's normal course of business for the HOA.
Got
it. Does that answer the question, Tina?
And if you have any questions for me as far as money, dollars, that type of thing, please reach out. We'll get together and discuss.
And when I call Jeff next week, I'm going to show him some spreadsheets. And actually, I'll show him to you as well. And I can just show you how I forecast expenses and I track the costs. So if we go under or over budget, these are really effective in determining why. And most of the time, that's just information. It's good information. If we go over budget on something and we're tracking it properly, then we know why we went over budget on something and we learn from it. We don't, it's not to accuse anybody of wrongdoing. It's just, it's a learning curve and it's hard to predict, especially at Deer Springs Ranch, what something is going to cost to the penny. And that's not going to be the expectation. It's just going to be the tracking part, forecasting and tracking. And I can
to the penny. I can't do unless I actually.
I'm not. That's what I just said. You don't need to go to the penny.
Right. But
and when we meet with Jeff next week, I can show you a spreadsheet I use to track to come up with your cost and then to track it. So we learn from it. Does that make sense?
I mean, it'll be about $500 to $600 to install the whole thing.
Okay, so
send that proposal to the board, please.
Yeah.
And we'll do. We got to move on from this, but yes, your proposal is recognized. Send the proposal on, and we'll respond.
Real quick with the reasoning is so that when we winterize the laundry container the ranch managers can still do laundry inside. That's the reasoning.
Understand. And it makes perfect sense.
Hey, any more comments on the new business?
Yes, sir. This is Alex Trinetsky again. I apologize. This is, I believe, an agenda item you're probably going to get to. But, you know, coming up in a couple of weeks, it was a little concerning for us. We saw that there may be some power issues with the cabins. And, you know, normally that wouldn't be an issue when the refrigerators were propane. But that's my primary concern going up there is for the food storage while we're up there. So I'm hoping you might be able to address the little more detail about the power issues that the cabins are experiencing.
Well, what the issues are is the batteries are old and they need to be replaced periodically, and we're at that point. Jeff's been working on that. That's part of his discussion today. If we can get it done in that time, I doubt we can get it done that quickly. If it's sunny, you'll have power during the day. But Jeff, is there any storage ability left on the lower cabins?
A little bit. Not much.
Yeah. And we've known this has been coming since it was put in initially. And the reason why we did that was because Brent and I would spend most of the opening and closing of the cabins was taking care of the propane refrigerators. And we literally had to take apart all the fire-up components and clean them and turn them upside down and flip them sideways and get the freon circulating. And we did have problems with propane refrigerators going down fairly frequently, and so people brought ice chests, and that's the best suggestion I can give you unless somebody has another idea.
Well, I'm just going to add to it real quick. So, Alex, you're the only one staying in any of the cabins for the first part of your stay. At the end of your stay, so the 24th through the 26th, there is somebody in cabin 8. So, but we'll only have two cabins. 9 and 10 will be closed by that time. So you won't be able to, or they won't be consuming. So hopefully we'll have enough power for you. But back to Kurt's comments, it'd be wise to bring extra ice and cooler and stuff that way, because we can't guarantee that the batteries will be functioning. But if we have good sun, they're operating during the day. The difficulty we're having is carrying things through the night. So hopefully, you know, with that in mind, you can kind of plan accordingly. But we are going to discuss replacing those and getting those done, and you'll have a little bit better idea where that's at. But based on your reservation, I think you'll be okay with just one cabin. We've shut everything else down. But, yeah, so that's just adding to that.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I have a very old battery pack, but I don't know if it'll get me through the night, but maybe I'll try to use that on night just in case. So if it does go down, but thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Nope.
Does anybody else have any other comments, questions about today's agenda? Okay, so we're going to move forward with new business. The update on the board responsibilities, aside from the positions that we hold, I will be agriculture and fencing. Social media and the website is Cade Michael Thomas. They're all capable of doing that kind of work. And they'll be sorting that out amongst them. Kevin Poole is over Rhodes. Jeff is over cabins, fuel, and propane. And Michael Jordanson, obviously, treasurer, website, reservations. Reservations will be handled mainly between Michael and Cade. And Dan Wirt, we have heading up risk assessment, management, and safety. And this is, he's heading that up. It's a board responsibility amongst all of us. Everything is amongst all of us, but this specifically is a very touchy area, and Dan is best fit to this is his strong point. So he's going to be heading that up for us. And that's where we stand on positions right now.
The only additional comment I'd make on that is that Larry has agreed to keep on doing wildlife and fish ponds with us, but
he did.
To be kind of the representative for that. So.
And actually, that's Kevin Poole, but he'll be coordinating with Larry and all that.
Yep.
Michael, do you want to – any questions on the positions, anyone? Michael, do you want to fill us in on the payment of Miller Harrison bill?
Sure. We have a bill due for Miller Harrison, which provided DSROA an analysis to go forward after all the board members resigned, but Cade. I see no reason not to pay it, but I'm going to open the forum for discussion.
This is Kevin Poole, Lot 64. I'm going to have to object to that bill as it is not a valid bill due and payable by the Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association. That was a decision made by Cade by himself in violation of Bylaw 6.11, a quorum of directors. Violation of Bylaw 6.12, maybe I have that one wrong. I believe also violation of Bylaw 6.13. Those cover a quorum of directors. A single board member is not a quorum. There was no discussion. There was no vote. It was an individual's decision. And an individual board member does not have the authority to make a decision to enter into any form of legal binding contract for the ranch association by himself. It would be the same as if I took it upon myself tomorrow morning to call a law firm and hire a lawyer myself to represent the homeowners association. I do not have that authority, and neither did Cade at that time.
I have a comment here. Bylaw 7.09 explains a fiduciary responsibility of all board members. Covenant 13, liability of board members. No board member is personally liable for good faith acts. I respect and commend Cade for his continuing on the board when all others had vacated. I have no belief that he was acting in anything other than good faith, and I support DSROA paying the attorney bill. Both invoices from September 25 totaling $3,700 and change.
Okay, this is Dan Wirt with a comment. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is not very long, and I request that it be entered verbatim in the meeting minutes, the written meeting minutes.
Can you forward that to me so I make sure I do that?
Yes, I will forward that to you so that you don't have to listen and transcribe. So, Deer Springs Ranch is a nonprofit corporation. Utah corporation law says that a quorum of the board is no less than two. No less than two. So the decision to retain Miller Harrison was made by a single board member without a quorum. Miller Harrison did not and could not represent the DSROA. Miller Harrison was not authorized to represent the DSROA. Miller Harrison represented a single board member, Cade Hoff. Relying on the Miller Harrison opinion regarding the conduct of the election was illegitimate. In fact, the Miller-Harrison opinion has already been challenged by another attorney. The proper course for Cade Hoff would have been to follow Bylaw 5.5.2 with regard to excluding candidates in violation of Rule 4.02. The beneficiaries of this illegitimate process, Thomas LeClaire and Jeff Collins, should recuse themselves from this vote because of conflict of interest. Cade Hoff should also recuse himself and take personal responsibility for the Miller-Harrison bill. Cade Hoff violated Utah Corporation Statute 16-6A-816 in an attempt to justify violation of Bylaw 5.5.2 and wants to stick the ranch with a bill for legal services that he was not authorized to engage on behalf of the DSROA. Cade Hoff has characterized the opinion from Miller-Harrison as, quote, the formal position of the association regarding the qualification of the candidates who have not signed the waiver. This is false. It is not the formal position of the association. Cade Hoff, Thomas LeClaire, and Jeffrey Collins need to recuse themselves from this vote. That's the end.
Dan, should you recuse yourself from this vote? And that direct action was based on an action that you made. So
no,
if they have to recuse their vote,
I disagree totally with that.
I knew you would.
I presented that as a member, not a board member.
So just to kind of clarify, so everybody's kind of aware where things are at, the only reason I hired an attorney, and I think this is what Michael's kind of referring to, was because you, Dan Wert, hired an attorney and demanded that we recuse those people from the vote. So I did not feel like, well, two things. One of my other options was to go ahead and appoint a replacement board and have that board do an election, but I felt like that was not responsible for me to do either, because then I could have appointed a board to vote the way that I wanted to go, and you would have had a complaint, you know, from that scenario as well. So my full purpose all along has been to allow the members to make a decision. And the members were given the opportunity to vote, and they have voted. If I had appointed a board, that board would still be in place. You would not be on the board. I would not be on the board. Those four members would be still running on the board. So I think it's benefited the ranch to get everybody on the board, you know, to hopefully work together and be able to make things work that way. I feel totally justified in my actions. I don't know what else I could have done, you know, faced with a lawsuit, legal action from you, and not having a board in place and not being able to form a board without allowing the members to vote, unless I just formed the board on my own, which again, per the bylaws and per the rules, I could have formed a board, but that doesn't seem like that would have been fair. So again, I stand by my actions, and as I've told you previously, if the membership feels like my actions were not justified, and you want to put it to a membership vote, and they agree with you that I'm totally prepared.
No, Kate, we're not putting it to a member vote.
There's no mechanism for that, Kate.
This is a board vote,
there is. You can call a special meeting, get 51%, but there's not going to be. There's no mechanism for straw polls that you're suggesting. And, Kate, I would disagree with you that as a member, I hired an attorney to produce an opinion which was your legitimate course was to follow the bylaws. And with regard to you as a single board member, creating an entire new board, that is totally illegitimate because of Utah state corporation law, which I just cited, 16-6A-816, that the board may not, as in a nonprofit corporation, the board may not proceed without a quorum, and that quorum is no less than two.
So how is the board supposed to proceed, Dan, if one, you won't allow us to do an election, and two, I can't appoint a new board?
It's a catch-22.
There's no way for me to proceed.
You are misrepresenting the situation. Your legitimate course as a single board member was to follow the bylaw as it existed. That was the only legitimate course. You were acting as an individual.
4.02
without
4.02 is undisputed.
I'm speaking now without a quorum and without the authority to do what you did. Your legitimate course was to follow the bylaw.
Yeah, I disagree with you, and we're going to continue to disagree. So,
you should read the Utah statute, corporation statute, 16-6A-816.
Dan, I've read it. I also seeked legal counsel before I took any action, and legal counsel advised me to do it the way that I did.
Right. You sought legal counsel as an individual and could not and did not represent the association.
The attorneys do not agree with you.
But I'm gonna butt in here, and I'm gonna say that Kate acted in the best interest of the ranch.
And in good faith.
What's that?
And in good faith.
And in good faith.
And not following the law.
Well, Dan, I'm just saying that he acted in good faith for the ranch, and he wasn't out for his personal gain, and that's how we all got a chance to be on the board today.
And that is all irrelevant.
So I'm going to cut through. Let me cut through the chase here. And what is your expectation?
My expectation is that Kate Hoff is responsible personally for this bill. He was not under state law able to represent the association. And this bill should not be paid from the membership monies. So, you know, you all are now going on about following state law, right?
Yes.
The state law says that corporation law says that Kate Hoff did not have a quorum to do this, was not authorized to proceed in this manner with the hiring an attorney, and that attorney could not represent the DSROA.
Okay, so I'm going to say that both sides have presented their cases on this. I'm going to throw in that, yes, we are about the law, and we are learning the law, and we're looking back. I mean, I can remember when I first got on the board where everything was voted on in the executive meeting, and that was against the law. I can go 3 years ago back when Cindy Olson was the president, and we were all trying to get things straight with the law, and now I think it's our responsibility and opportunity to align our rules and regulations with the state laws. But I think at this point we need to put this to a vote.
I'm not ready to vote on this at all. I was not equally represented by Kate Hoff or this attorney, Miller Harris. I requested information about Miller Harris on three different occasions. On all three different occasions, that request was denied in violation of Utah state law. It was a valid written official request with a 5-day response period. All three times, Kate Hoff denied that request. He alleges that his attorney recommended that he, quote, ignore the request, and then later said that he would not provide justifications for ignoring a valid request under Utah law of a homeowners association. Therefore, I certainly was not represented by this attorney. And there's no way, if you're going to represent everyone except Kevin Poole, if you will look at the itemized invoice where it states on item number 8, a review email from K. Poole. That is the first request sent to that to Kate Hoff as the only sitting board member to provide information, which was denied. And if you want, I can certainly share the emails with the board to verify everything that I'm saying is factual. Kate can certainly get on here and dispute what I'm saying if he so wishes, but I can provide the receipts because I do have them. Furthermore, I don't see how the representation of certain people who refuse to follow a rule that I abided by, even in my objection, is fair and equitable to me as an individual of the board or as a member of this ranch. It was a direct discrimination against me personally because I was the only objecting board candidate that signed the waiver in compliance with Rule 4.02 and the bylaws in order to run as a candidate. Therefore, I was completely discriminated against by those actions. And if you're discriminating against one board member, or one member of the ranch, you do not represent the entirety of the ranch, period.
So I can make a response if you want.
Bring it on.
So Kevin did make the request. Kevin did not make the request per our bylaws, which give a 5-day response time. He needed to identify a clear reason why. Irregardless of that, there are only certain records, and again, this is probably something we need to update in our bylaws that we've learned going forward with this. You're only allowed to request certain records through that process. State law has actually changed as well to where it's not a 5-day requirement, it's a 14-day requirement. Per the state law, the attorney communications and or other things between the board are not responsible, or we do not need to respond to that. So, again, if you want an official response from the attorney, he'd be willing to provide that, but that's going to cost an additional amount related to that. But per his direction, it was not a valid record request, and he indicated that I did not need to respond to that request. And I went above and beyond and actually did respond to you and informed you that per the attorney, I wasn't supposed to respond. So I felt like I gave you more information than I was even directed to at that point in time. It wasn't trying to discriminate against you or harm you in any way. And obviously by you being on the board, you haven't been harmed in this scenario. So anyway, that's my position. That's why I took the action that I did. It was upon, as you indicated, you know, it incurred a charge to the attorney because I asked him how I should respond and what I should do, and that was his response. So,
thank you, Cade. You have just validated my point that you took an effort to make certain that you did not have to respond to a member of the ranch. You did not make clear any of that, and furthermore, the 14-day period of time more than expired between the request and the current time frame and or the actual election. So you have absolutely validated that you're still in violation of Utah state law. Thank you.
Does anybody else have any comments on this subject?
Yeah, I've got one more.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, Israel with Beck 274. Just wanted to make a or ask for a clarification. There's mention of that statute and the specific code and the definition of a quorum. I was reviewing it. I don't see it says two members. Cable is the only member on the board, so kind of by default, he's the majority. Just wanted to point that out. It doesn't define it needs to be two members, so there is no
it violation says, it, of that. Come on. It says no less than two. What are you looking at?
No. I'm reading the statute. It says a majority.
No, it says no less than two. You should read 16-6A-816.
Minor subsection, but there's only one member of the board, so there can't be two. That's impossible.
Well, exactly, and that's exactly why he did not have a quorum.
So we're going to debate this to the end.
So then I have a question. I have a question kind of for Dan and Israel Whitbeck. So if the board can only consist of one, you can't have two. For Cade not to move forward with any governance of Deer Springs Ranch, wouldn't that have put him in violation of his duty as a board member to seek counsel in the face of an attorney going after Deer Springs Ranch for any purpose?
The attorney did not go after Deer Springs Ranch. The attorney,
well, I think that the demand letter the is actually merely, going after
attorney,
Deer Springs
the
Ranch.
The attorney but. Merely expressed an opinion that the proper thing to do was to file to
the
demand.
No,
one person at a time,
an
please.
Opinion that the yeah. course that it was not legitimate to violate the bylaw.
An opinion is different than a demand letter. A demand letter demands something of somebody. So something was being demanded
right.
of Deer Springs Ranch Organization, right? So we had one board member who represented Deer Springs Ranch Organization at that time. So it was his duty to seek help to continue with the governance of Deer Springs Ranch. If he had not done that, then he would be in violation of his responsibilities as a board member. So
no.
he can't win.
No. The demand was to follow the bylaw. Now, that's very clear. That's the default. That's the default position. And look, I've got one more thing to say here. Those board members who vote to have the association pay for these bills will be in violation of state law, corporation law, and
define the section, Dan.
And all of those board members who vote to pay this bill will essentially be saying, well, we should follow the state law when we agree with it, but we don't have to follow the state law when we don't agree with it. It's intensely hypocritical. Intensely hypocritical.
I think, Dan, if we were established in the law as well as we should be established in the law, I would validate your point. I don't think we're established in the law as much as we need to be, and that's our goal. And I think moving forward, we can make corrections in these things. In the meantime, I'm going to call an end to this discussion and call for a vote.
No, we don't choose when we obey law and when we don't. Because we violate the law is not an excuse to continue violating the law. I have to flat out patently disagree with that statement.
Yep. I do too. Now, you're making a present decision to violate the law. That's what you're doing.
So I propose that we pay Miller and Harrison invoice for the attorney retained for evaluation of the demand letter sent by Dan Wirt.
I second you.
Aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Kurt Jacobson, aye.
Thomas LeClaire, aye.
Kate Hoff, abstain.
Dan Wirt, nay.
Kevin Poole, nay.
I would just point out here that those who should have recused themselves as the beneficiary of this illegitimate process failed to do so, except for Cade. So, congratulations with all of your bloviating about following law, LeClaire and Collins.
We can turn that right back around, Dan, and say, since you were the one who sent the demand letter, you should have recused as well. So you're in the same boat.
No, as a member, that was my responsibility to encourage you to demand that you follow the bylaws, Collins.
Well,
which obviously you don't want to do when it suits you.
Our covenants protect Cade Hoff in this instance. He acted in good faith.
State and law.
And every person I have talked
state to. State law supersedes the governing documents, LeClaire.
And extenuating circumstances.
The vote is in favor of.
Well, I personally just want to enter into the record that I am absolutely, utterly, 100% ashamed of the actions of this board and this particular thing, because it has disregarded all forms of Utah state law governing HOAs.
Yeah, congratulations, board.
Michael, what do you got for us on reserve study?
The reserve study stuff came up because of the batteries needing to be replaced in the upper and lower cabins. Prior boards have done a good job at setting aside reserve funds. You know, we went back to budgets from 2017 where certain things were put on there, talking about replacing of batteries and other things that we that are consumables that we know are big projects coming up. We don't have a formal reserve study, reserve analysis, however you want to term it. Until there's a board-approved reserve analysis, basically those funds are off limits. We cannot use them without a member vote to use those funds.
Why not? We just violated Utah law. Let's just violate some more. What do we care about the law? Let's just spend willy-nilly irregardless of what.
Thank you, Kevin. There is enough funds in the operating budget to cover the necessary expense for the batteries coming out that we'll discuss further down in the agenda. So this wasn't a vote topic. This wasn't it was more of a informative that we cannot dig into the reserve funds until we have a reserve study, reserve analysis. We'll be proposing that that's on the budget for next year. Next month we'll do the budget. So we'll address more at that time for the reserve analysis.
So I guess that's kind of my question discussion. What's our plan to develop the reserve analysis? You want to have it kind of prepared by November? That seems kind of tight time frame.
No. I'm just going to have a budget line item to pay somebody to do a reserve analysis. I don't think we can do an independent, in-house, impartial job. Too many times we want to cut corners. We want to do it the least expensive way possible instead of the right way. Again, I'm one vote, so, you know, I may get shot down and it may be done in-house, but we can't touch the reserve funds without having a formal board-approved reserve analysis, reserve study.
So your proposal is to put a lot budget line item on in the next budget cycle, but then we would actually be hiring a company to do the reserve study, and then that would be what the board would take and approve.
Yeah, we can go that route. We could, if I'm overridden, we could do it in-house. We can pay for a lease of the software that does it. You know, there are other options, and all the options I'll put on the table, and we can discuss them.
Sounds good.
But, you know, I'm not saying we have to go with company A or company B or do it this way or do it that way, but we do need to have a reserve study that, to my knowledge, has never been done. You know,
it might be easier to maintain one, you know, but actually coming up with the initial one is probably harder to do than maintain.
The initial one is the hard part. Updating that reserve study, reserve analysis, is much easier if we have a template to go from.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think we could probably do the updates in-house, but doing the first one is a big task.
So Michael, if I understand you correctly, then the budget is sustainable without reserves for a long enough period to go through this exercise?
I believe so.
Awesome. I got one before we go to Jeff to talk about the batteries. I know
there is a question from a member. Tina is asking, wouldn't an expert doing that analysis, Michael, need to understand the internal workings of the ranch?
No. This is an asset, so they would just need direction of what are our assets, and they would analyze the life expectancy of those assets, where they are in that life expectancy, figure out a potential cost analysis for replacement, repair, and set up a timeline, and what funds would be needed to be set aside to cover each year the items on the reserve fund, or the items on the reserve analysis that are coming due that year. And that, for example, if Kevin 10 needs the roof replaced, or it on the reserve study, it says that it's going to come due in 2027. Its life expectancy is done. Well, in 2027, if we do an analysis and the roof is still good and we put it out another 2 years, the analysis is nothing more than, hey, these should be on your radar coming due in the future. And have appropriate funds set aside to cover those things in the future. That's really all a reserve analysis is here are our assets, here's what is going to, the life expectancy of this asset is coming due. Let's look at it. Do we need to replace it? Do we need to repair it? Do we need to maintain it? Or do we put it off 2 more years?
Was there further discussion?
On this topic, I don't know. There is a question that I guess we can address at some point.
And we can address it again at the next meeting, I think.
Yes.
Give us some time to do independent research and look into it. And,
yes, we'll have more discussion on this. Absolutely.
Michael, I guess just one question. Have you been involved in a study like that before, or have you hired out for that before? Is this a $200 analysis? Is this a $1,000 analysis, or is it TBD?
It's
not cheap.
Something the size of the ranch. I'm guessing if you called around, you're going to get between a $10,000 and a $15,000 rough estimate.
I don't think it's quite that high. I'm thinking $1,500 to $2,000, but I could be wrong.
It's going to be closer to five with 10 cabins, the ranch house. But, I mean, this is, yes, they're expensive if you pay them outright. If we have people that want to do some of the upfront work. We can cut into some of that cost, but that upfront work would be things like, you know, going through and getting serial numbers and the date purchased and stuff. There's a lot to a reserve study. But what that also affords us is it gives us something to budget in the future.
Yeah, happy to support any pre-work that we can do. Let me know how I can do that.
Are there any other questions for me?
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, that's it for me.
Okay, let's move forward. Jeff, can you go over the house batteries, the ranch house batteries, and the lower cabin batteries, please?
Both battery systems are running on fumes.
Pretty much daytime use only when there's sun?
The most part. Well, the ranch house for sure, that one kind of requires running the generator. The lower cabin system, when we're only running one cabin off of it, seems to make it through the night. I'm not sure about two or
more.
Well,
those are the same batteries we put in initially about 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, but so initially it was two banks of batteries. One of them has completely gone belly up. So we removed that from the system, so now we're running on one bank of those.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just the problem.
So can you – I know you've emailed us, but just for the members and everybody else, you've been working with Ben Collinwood?
To put together two different systems.
Correct.
They're both identical, essentially. So what will work on the cabins will work on the lower ranch house. And with Ben running them through his solar company, he has the ability to get us a significant discount for those systems. So I'm personally doing one with him for my house. What the ranch does is on them, but.
Well, I'm just trying to get the information. I know you put a lot of time into this, and I just want everybody else to know what you've done, and we appreciate it.
I have a couple questions.
I was going to say, I'm happy to chime in. This is Ben Collinwood talking.
Hi, Ben.
I'm going to kind of go through a few things with folks if they'd like.
Obviously. I do have a few questions. So, first and foremost, can we separate the invoice? DSROA needs a invoice just for DSROA, and Jeff needs an invoice just for Jeff. Because if I have an invoice stating 18 batteries, and that goes to the accountant, and he starts to depreciate 18 batteries, well, we don't have 18 batteries, and somebody starts to question that. I just need the invoices separate. So DSROA gets its own invoice, and Jeff gets his own invoice.
Yeah, the answer to that is yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Who is the manufacturer of cells, the internal cells? Do you know offhand?
I don't. Would it be okay if I shared my screen with
Absolutely.
Everybody?
Absolutely.
Share this here real quick. The manufacturer of the total unit is a company called Renin Power. Pretty large company, in the hundreds of millions, if not in the billion-dollar mark in terms of what they manufacture and that kind of thing. This is one of their products. It's called an e-brick. You stack them four high. You can see a picture of it here on the screen. I'll scroll down and you kind of see a few pictures of them just kind of put together, that kind of thing. Each one of these units, here's the specs here, just at the very bottom. It's about 5 kilowatt hours per unit here. It runs basically at 48 volt battery level. It's got 95 amps It's about 100 pounds a piece, so it's 99 pounds each. So this is the unit that, we've been looking at purchasing. I have purchased one myself for my own lot. So, in fact, let me just give a quick little background. So, obviously, I'm the vice president of a smaller solar company. It's called Neighborhood Power. You can look it up, neighborhoodpower.com. We're based out of Hawaii, actually, but I oversee sales across North America, and I've been doing solar for about 23 years now. In any case, I'm not interested in selling the ranch. I just want to make it clear for everybody, because obviously, given some of the topics here, there's some tension about where money flows for the association. Although I'm in solar, I'm not interested in making money on this deal. This is me being a member. I own two lots, and I'm literally looking at how do I help the association, right? How do I help the ranch? And so just so everybody knows, everything that I'm proposing here, I am doing and proposing at cost. There's no markup from my company. There's no markup from me or Jeff or F anybody like that. So just keep that in mind. The batteries themselves right here, they have a 10-year warranty. They have more than that in life. They have an 8,000 cycle life. So if you were to go from 100% down to, let's say, 90% every day, they do that 8,000 cycles. I believe that translates into something like a 20-plus year lifetime expectancy. But they do come with at least a 10-year warranty. They cost about $1,000 a piece. I think you saw the quote from, so I was purchasing the quote that you saw was my company just getting a quote from these guys, cause we're buying them for other projects that we do normally. And they charged us about $1,000 a piece. That was their, whatever you want to call it, dealer price to us. And then on top of that, what I'm able to do is take the tax rate, right? As a homeowners association, the association doesn't pay taxes, but there are tax credits available out there on these things. And I think what might be good to show is just let me pop this up on the screen if you guys, let's see. Did this, are you still seeing the e-brick, or are you seeing the tax credit?
No, battery tax credit.
Okay, cool. So there's a whole bunch of tax credits available for solar and batteries right now, but they're ending pretty soon, right? The big, beautiful bill that passed, residential tax credits end at the end of this year. So if you wanted to get something for your own cabins or homes, do it right now because you got like 2.5 months left. on the commercial side, they're ending mid-July, July 4th or July 5th next year. Got to have your project started by then. And so right now, just what we're looking at is there's a 30% investment tax credit available for all solar and battery projects. In addition, Deer Springs Ranch is in what's called a low-income zone. So you get a 10% adder on top of that. You're also, but this one is something that you have to apply for. And sometimes if there's too many applications, that goes to a lottery. And they just pick and choose randomly, like who gets it. The other one here, there's a few others. Energy Community Zone, this is basically an area that in the last 10 years, if a coal plant or natural gas plant has been shut down, they're trying to allocate money to those areas. And so Deer Springs Ranch is in one of those areas and qualifies as an Energy Community Zone. And then another one is domestic content. If you buy batteries, and this is very hard, by the way, there's not a lot of batteries out there that qualify as domestically made, but there are a couple. Tesla is one of them, but Tesla is usually just the really big ones, but they have some. Anyway, if you qualify as a domestically made battery, you get another 10%. And then lastly, I'll mention that there's a REAP grant, which is the Rural Energy Properties or something like that grant. And Deer Springs Ranch would qualify because it's in a REAP zone. Now, this requires a lot of work, paperwork, and applications. But it's something that I'm just throwing out. There's like just FYI, it's available for everybody. So if you're to get all of these things, you could get up to 85% off the cost of any battery or any solar project that you do. But we would have to, the association would need to act on it and do it before July of next year to get that rolling. At this moment, what I've proposed is like, look, I can get this, I can take this for on behalf of the association. I can take this on behalf of the association. So that's a 40% off number right now. And then we can in the future try and apply for this low income zone and get that one as well, potentially. But at the moment, so I basically said, okay, we can take whatever that $1,000 cost, I can knock 40% off. I'll take the, my company will take the tax credits on behalf of the association, and so that cost drops right from $1,000 to $600, you know, 40% off per battery. Anyway, so that's now the kicker with this is that my company has to own them for 5 years. There's a tax recapture period, and so during that tax recapture period, the same owner owns the system, and then at the end of that 5 year period, it doesn't matter who owns it. Basically, I'm suggesting that my company would own the system and lease it to you in what we call a prepaid lease, right? You just, you pay the $600 up front for each battery. You guys operate it, control the battery, do everything you can. But technically on the legal side, my company would own the battery for that 5 year period. At the end of the 5 years, it turns over to the association. It's yours to do with whatever you need to after that. So that's kind of the gist of it. Like I said, I'm not here to make money on it. Just trying to pass through the cost, trying to help out the association and that kind of thing. I have more stuff if you guys want to see it. Like you can see, like this is the energy community tax credit bonus. You can see that anything in the green qualifies. So a lot of the state of Utah is in this energy community tax credit bonus area. I've got Deer Springs Ranch highlighted down there at the bottom. Also on the low income bonus program, these are the different areas that qualify as low income, and Deer Springs Ranch qualifies in that area as well. And then this application I'll show you, this is a low income program. Some of it's based on geographic areas. Some of it's based on what type of project that you're doing. Like if it's, you know, like a low income community, multifamily housing kind of project, something like that, all those things kind of qualify. So I'll leave it there. I've been looking at what would be possible for the ranch in the future if you guys are interested. Things like a solar pavilion of some sort. It can be used to store vehicles in the future, right? And through the winter months, it can be used for activities for the ranch, for people, for family reunions, whatever it may be. Also, obviously, would provide power, provide some shade, that kind of thing. You know, this whole structure, the steel, the panels on top, the concrete foundation, all of that can qualify under those up to 85% tax credits. If we go forward and kind of just say, hey, like, let's look into this, you know, and see what we can do, and then we get, you know, a huge amount of that covered.
So is that something that also has to get done by July of next year?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be finished by July. We just have to start the project, and it would say, and the rules say that you have to incur 5% of the project cost by that date, by July 4th, to have started. So it's two things. You can either start physical construction by July 4th or incur 5% of the project cost by that date.
Hey, Ben, I have a question. I'm not familiar with leasing in this sort of environment, but I know there are some advantages to like a one-pay lease in other formats. I'm just curious about over the term of that 5 year period or prepaid lease period, if the system was destroyed or the system had a complete failure or batteries had failures, what protections are provided under that one pay lease or ancillary instruments that protect the ranch from that investment for that investment?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good question. In fact, so let me put up the lease. So what I did here is I just took, guys, what I could do, which was to create a one pager as simple as I could for a lease agreement, and said essentially, right, this would be a 5 year lease. I hope you can read this. I'll try and zoom in here a little bit, make it a little bit bigger for you. A 5 year lease, 60 months. This would be the monthly lease payments. It basically, I took the $12,000 minus the 40%, worked out to be like this number. There was a little bit of like, brackets or whatever that went on to that as well. Freight would be extra. We did get a freight quote. The freight quote was about $900. Just prorating that out. And then what I put in here is the DSR, the association is responsible for repairs, maintenance, and servicing and warranty claims. Now, if let's say the batteries did fail, then you can, right, they'd have a 10-year warranty. So we can go back to the manufacturer, can go back to Renton Power to get those repaired and fixed. If they have to ship them back, the shipping costs would most likely be on Deer Springs Ranch, that kind of thing. And just similar to what you probably have already purchased for the existing batteries. Once you buy them, they're yours. You have to take care of them, that kind of thing. So I'm not, I really didn't want to say, I'm not looking for kind of a long-term relationship. It was just like, look, how do we get those tax credits on behalf of the association? Okay, my company can own it technically, but really the thought is let's give the batteries to the association and let you guys do with them what you need to. So I passed, so what I put in here is just like my company by the name is called, this is my private LLC. It's called H2Go, right? It's going to pass through the 10-year manufacturer warranties to the association. Yeah, so I'm really not having, I'm not there. So there's no liability, I guess is what I'm saying. So if something fails, right, you have to look to the manufacturer for any misuse, neglect, things like that, that may fail.
I have a more of a technical question on these items, because I noticed on the invoice that or the estimate invoice that Jeff had presented that these have no heat strip in them. I would think that that's something we would need to add, because the environment that they're going in, a metal container on one and an insulated building on the other, neither of these environments are heated. And to my understanding, lithium doesn't work that great in non-heated environment, thus the need for the heat strip.
That is a valid question there. So we are recommending, because of the nature of Deer Springs Ranch being as cold as it gets in the wintertime, they should be, in my opinion, placed in an insulated area, insulated container, box, whatever it may be. They don't necessarily need a heat strip, because they themselves create some of that heat to keep it warm. But as long as they're inside an insulated box, the airflow, these are designed to be air cooled. So that air cooling would suffice. There's other kinds, right, that have like liquid cooled stuff. They're more expensive, but they keep themselves cool with liquid. These ones are air cooled.
I think he's concerned on the other side, the freezing temperature.
The freezing. Yeah.
I run lithium, so I understand where he's coming from.
The system I have now is it's in an insulated crate, steel crate, and there's a little portable heater that plugs into the system that keeps the crate warm.
Gotcha.
So, yep. You know, as long as there's charge in the batteries, it's a real small heater and it doesn't pull a lot of power. But it keeps temps above 40.
Yeah, I can pull up the specs on that in a little bit here. I didn't have them up handy today, but and just double check their operating range. Right. I obviously, it's going to have some range of like, there's your high end temperature you can operate at, and here's the low end. We can double check that.
Okay.
Awesome. I assume each has an internal BMS and it
comes with free software as well. Of like, so you'd be able to, as long as you had Wi-Fi at the ranch, be able to log in, see the battery state of charge, things like that.
I'm sure the warranty is going to be void if we install them and it goes down to negative 20 here and the batteries run dead. I mean, that's user error. So I'm just,
yeah.
And to Kevin's point is to try and make sure that, you know, we understand that they don't have internal heating, and the temperature is a concern that we need to be aware of.
Yeah.
So kind of off of the technical side, I do think we need to have some, you know, make sure that our temperatures aren't going to be a concern, but moving over to the tax credit side of things, obviously we don't have any tax burden, so it makes sense to kind of get the savings from you guys to do that. But what happens if there's a scenario where you don't get that tax credit for whatever reason? Because the price we're getting kind of relies on you being able to take advantage of that tax credit, right? So
Yeah. So I have taken on that burden. So you'll see here, if I go back to this lease page for a second. So I just put it down as though I get it. So basically I'm saying to the association, there's no liability on you if I don't get the tax credit. That getting that tax credit is on me and my company.
Okay.
Understand. So I have a couple questions and a comment. Ben, I would not question your motivations, first of all. Second, is this lease is between the association and your LLC or the association and Neighborhood Power?
So I work for a company called Neighborhood Power. I'm the vice president of that company. That's where I get my solar experience. But I have my own LLC, which is actually doing a startup for hydrogen and solar stuff together. It's that company that I'm proposing to do the lease agreement with, just because it's personal. I mean, I'm as a member of the HOA, right? I'm interested in helping it that way. Neighborhood Power, if I ran it through them, they'd want to mark it up and make money on the deal. And so I was like, look, I'm just trying to help the HOA. So
okay,
just run this through my own LLC for you guys.
Like I said, I don't question your motivations. The second question has to do with the lease item, like number 11.
Okay.
It says, at the end of the term, full ownership and title of the equipment shall pass to the DSROA. And because I've been in my professional training trained to think of everything that can go wrong, what happens when, due to unfortunate circumstances, your LLC goes bankrupt, and then the assets are your assets in that company are disposed in a bankruptcy proceeding, and those assets are subject to liquidation and transfer to creditors. So at least theoretically, in that situation, the creditors could be coming to repossess our batteries.
Yeah, Dan, that is a valid point. If my company was to go belly up during that term, you're right, right? And creditors came after the assets or something like that. They could. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how bankruptcies all work, but it sounds like everything you just said is correct. If there's some language that we can put in here, I'm happy to do so, that says something like, you know, if my company goes belly up, the system immediately goes to you guys. If that's legal and we can do that, I'm happy to do that.
I have, that's outside my expertise, so I can't comment on that.
I'm thinking, though, if the terms of the lease are fully met, they'd have a hard time showing that there was still, I don't know, I mean,
if they wanted to take them back, they would have to as the lease is prepaid in full up front.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Whatever the remaining balance is from the term, they would then have to pay us back or reimburse us before they took the asset.
Right, because it's already been paid for. You can't go take back something that's been paid for.
Yeah, it's only structured this way for the tax shelter, right?
It's a question of who has title.
Understand.
And if the LLC has title, I think all of that other is irrelevant. They can come after that asset no matter where no matter whether this lease has been paid or not. So really it comes down to weighing the risks. This is a risk benefit cost benefit analysis. So you have to weigh the fact that we could get 40% off of $12,000, which is a substantial amount, versus the theoretical risk that we could lose the batteries if Ben Collinwood's LLC goes bankrupt. So it's a guess. Again, 40% off of $12,000 is a substantial amount.
$4,656.
Pardon?
$4,656.
That just about pay for a Miller Harrison bill, plus a little.
There you go. The irony. Yeah, I think those are valid points.
What is our next step, Ben?
If the association wants to do this, I'm ready to put in the order. The manufacturer is ready for the order as well. That's where they got the quote. I let them know that. I was like, look, after this board meeting, I'll let you know if they want to do it or not. And then we place the order. And so I would go ahead and pay for the total cost of the units. And then the association would just, I guess, sign the deal and send me a check.
So I'm going to direct it to Michael. How do you want to proceed as a treasurer?
That's fine. That's fine. I mean, we got to vote on it, obviously.
Yeah.
I have no problem sending us a receipt and paying it, assuming everyone votes to do that.
So just to be clear, we had some other bids too, right? So we've looked at so Brent sent us some options for other batteries, and most of them were running closer to the $10,000 range rather than the six, right? So I think I just want to make sure that
Kate, I did research this heavily, which is why I asked what cells were made of. You know, are they Eve cells, you know, which is one of the technologies out there. Battleborn is one of the biggest, you know. Renology has an eBrick system very similar to this, which has horrible reviews, independent reviews, that the cells in them are garbage Chinese junk and they don't last anywhere near the cycles.
What are the reviews on this system?
I couldn't find any. I couldn't find any independent reviews of this system.
So Ben, what is your experience with these batteries and customers?
So we have one of their other products right over here. They're bigger. They have a different one. It's called a bigger one. We are installing and purchasing probably 20 units of these ones. It's called their Impact 233A. They cost about $70,000 a piece for our commercial projects. We have data miners, things like that, that Neighborhood Power installs. We're also installing these for Oceanside, like a timeshare resort, Wyndham timeshare properties out in California right now. And I've got one spec'd in for a property down in the U.S. Virgin Islands as well. So we use them in remote areas. This particular one that we've been buying is a liquid-cooled version.
Does this larger system have the same batteries but just more of them?
Yeah, yeah. They're all lithium phosphate batteries. Yeah.
Lithium iron phosphate. Correct?
I don't know if the iron is in there. I've always referred to them just LiFePO, lithium phosphate, so I'm not sure.
They're the TO4s.
They're what?
TO4, lithium TO4.
Yeah, I would like to review the structures that these things are going in to make sure that we got the right product for the right environment. You know, I mean, I understand that most of the batteries are made in China anyway, like 95% of all lithium production is China. So trying to find a non-Chinese battery is going to be pathetic at best anyway. With that said, not all Chinese products are treated aided equal either, you know. So, I mean, I get, Michael, where you're saying, you know, what are the reviews on this? But I think no matter what product we install, we have to make sure we're putting the right product in the right environment.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think we'll definitely check that. Here's one thing I can add that might give folks a little bit of comfort. So I just attended about 2 weeks ago the opening factory ceremony for this company in Dallas, Texas. They are a Chinese company, but they have decided to enter the U.S. market and open up operations here in the USA to produce domestically made products. And so I thought that was a really nice commitment, right, from this manufacturer. I mean, they're big over in Asia, but they're like, hey, we think American market is worth it as well. And so they're going to be starting from about Q2, Q3 of next year, producing and assembling and manufacturing a lot of these products right here in the USA, in Dallas.
Jeff, how long has that company been around?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe they have it on their About Us page. Let me see if I can click on that and see if it takes us to anything.
And I guess theoretically, if they fail, they're supposedly under warranty, assuming that it's a reputable,
like
standing company.
About 11 years. Sorry, Dan, you cut out. Or maybe I cut out. Sorry, guys.
I mean, theoretically, if they fail, they're under warranty, assuming that the company is reputable.
Yeah. Can I say something on that? Because, so I mentioned earlier, I've been in the solar industry now for 23 years, and I can say warranties are not that valuable. Like, they're valuable for a little bit, like a year or two. But most companies that we've dealt with have disappeared over time, unfortunately. And that's whether it's the solar panel guys or the battery guys or whatever. And I'm just – my company, Neighborhood Power, we are constantly faced with replacing products that have failed 8 years, 10 years, 15 years in, that we just have to, like, repurchase because the warranties are – you can't get warranty covered on them. Yeah. So I'm saying that just as a personal thing, is like, we should probably plan on – the association should think about the warranty as not being super long-term. 10 years is wonderful, but it probably won't happen.
It's hard to get any company to recognize that far out. And it doesn't matter whether it's this company or Renology or PEMDOT or any of the other lithium battery companies. You know, they're in business to be in business, and – if they can find a flaw in your insulation, then you're SOL.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, while we have Ben on, can you touch on the compatibility with the lower cabins to these batteries?
I don't know much about that. Vance and Brent were heading into that stuff.
Yeah, they said something about it's not directly going through the inverter.
No, I've done this a little bit. So I had lithium, and we've got the solar trailer technology in the lower cabin. You got a different technology in the ranch house. But the solar trailer with the Sunny Islands, you can get certain BMSs to talk directly to the Sunny Islands, but it becomes kind of problematic. For sure, I've seen multiple people that have done it where they run it in an open loop scenario. What that means is that the Sunny Islands don't really send data or send power to them. The Midnight controller and the BMSs still manage everything, but then you lose some management in the inverters themselves. But then the inverters just pull the power from it and still run as an inverter. They're just not doing any battery management in that scenario. So I doubt we'll be able to get these BMSs to talk to the Sunny Islands very well, but we should be able to get the inverters to run in an open loop configuration and have them work that way. So you really only need the open loop if you're going to try and auto start a generator or do something, or sorry, closed loop if you want to auto start the generator and do some stuff that way. Which I was looking for on my trailer because I do have a generator on the trailer, but that's your biggest challenge is trying to get them to communicate back to the Sunny Island, but they can be run without that communication. So I think we'll be okay from that perspective. Worst case scenario.
Good. That's my question.
Ben, have you had any warranty experience with these batteries?
And we have not. Yeah, we haven't had any warranty claims with them yet.
Yeah.
And Ben, would your company be honoring the warranty for the duration, or is it strictly back to the manufacturer, or you as the seller honor the warranty for us?
Yeah, so I've wrote up the lease as a pass-through straight to the association, so the association could make a warranty claim directly with the manufacturer.
But in the scenario you described earlier where a battery is failing in 8 years, but the company failed in 4 years, does the association have recourse?
No.
No, I would say no, it doesn't. Right? If the manufacturer failed, let's say in year four, the warranty would be gone. Yeah.
Well, we don't own them in that 8 year time frame anyway, so it's not, I mean, technically we have no agreement.
Change the goalposts, but you understand the question.
Yeah. But I think even before that, if it goes 2 years into it and that company's gone, we still don't have any recourse through Ben. I mean, he's kind of out of it at that point. It's like
I tried to make it as much of a sale, right, as it could be. Really just trying to figure out how do we take advantage, how can we help the association take advantage of the tax credits that are out there to get that lower price point up front. But really, I mean, as you saw, the terms in there is like, look, I'm just passing this through to the association. You should probably treat it as a purchase, like you purchase and own it from that point onwards.
Yeah, for sure. I echo Dan's sentiments that appreciate your efforts and don't feel like you have, you know, you're doing this in a responsible way. Like you understand, you know, and appreciate it. Thank you.
So I guess to Kevin's point is our only concern is environment, right?
That's my concern is horses for courses. If we put them in a bad environment, you know, you're risking damaging the equipment, and that's certainly not worth it. Not if there's a simple solution like a heat strip or some form of insulation, something of that nature. I think would be remiss to put it in a bad environment.
Ben, what is their heat tolerance?
I'm actually looking it up right now, so give me just a minute and I'll come back to it.
Does that change whether we buy them or not, though, or does that just mean
moving forward, we need to, before they arrive, we need to take some action to correct the environment. And I'm asking about the heat because the ranch house
container.
Container gets way, way hot in the summertime. There's no ventilation in there, and that was something I never got to, but it was on my list. Brett and I discussed putting some ventilators on the roof or something that run through the wind so the heat has a way to get out, because the internet used to go out when it was hot because it was too hot inside the container, and that's just the way things were, and so we need to take a look at that. And I'm pretty sure the building at the lower cabins is already insulated, isn't it?
It's insulated. I don't know how hot it gets in the. We haven't had batteries inside. The batteries have been outside right now.
Yeah,
I would think that the inverters would.
Well, lithium can go inside because they don't disperse any gas.
Yep.
So if you guys can see the screen, I was able to grab the spec sheet on it, and we've got both storage conditions and operating temperature. So to store it anywhere from minus 20 degrees C, so somebody wants to make that calculation in Fahrenheit real quick, minus 20 degrees C to 55 degrees C, and then operating looks like you can charge between 0 and 50 and discharge between minus 20 and 50 degrees C.
Yeah, the high side is 122 Fahrenheit, so that's probably right about where the summer temperatures are.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably about what it is inside that container at headquarters.
It could be hotter.
We need to get some ventilation in there by summer.
Just while we're on the topic, I just want to make sure that everyone can see the chat. There has been a couple comments made in there. Just acknowledge them.
Oh. How do you see the chat? Let's see here.
There's 12.
EMP
issue. My apologies to those who are commenting in chat.
Yeah,
Yeah, I don't know that we can take into consideration EMP protection, but
they sell blankets.
Kurt's burying his, aren't you? But I don't, the ranch house, we already have places, but
mine's set up to be buried, but we're talking about they have EMP blankets. That, what are they made out of, Debbie? Copper? Yes. Yeah, they're made out of copper. Ours is going to go into like a little block building attached to the house. EMP. There are devices that are, I think they're about $300. And they protect against lightning strikes and so forth. Debbie had one at her place in Florida, and lightning struck, and it protected her system, but it blew out, and they replaced it with a new one for free.
So does everyone have enough information to like vote on it or no?
I think we do.
I think we do.
I just wanted to bring up the environment because Kevin made a good point on that. And so I let's put it up for a vote.
I got one quick question before we do that. So,
okay.
Are we purchasing just for the lower cabins or the lower cabins and the ranch house and or
really?
Want separate invoices for the two if we're doing both?
No, they can all be on one invoice.
Separated from Jeff's doing.
Or if anybody else decided to jump on this, it'd have to be separate because the amortization.
Yeah, I'm just kind of back to the environment thing. I have no real objection. I'm just looking at operating temperature at 0 centigrade, which is the freezing point. And the ranch house temperatures are going to go well below that this winter. They always do, you know. So, I mean, kind of back to that, do we need to invest in something to keep these things in the right range? Because my concern is if they won't charge, they won't do anything below freezing, then we're going to spend about 6 months out of the year in that zone.
Yes, we need to include heating pads and covers for these for the winter time. They can be automated. They can be on a temperature sensing switch that will turn on and off based on set temperature. All of that is totally feasible when we install these. We just need to make sure we do it.
Just throwing it out there, but somewhat anecdotally maybe, but water in people's garages out at the ranch doesn't freeze in the wintertime. Air is a very good insulator, thermal insulator. So have we taken any temperature readings inside a 20x8 container to know that the internals of the container actually go below, also considering the batteries give off their own heat?
Not to my knowledge.
Not trying to discount the concern. I'm 100% on board with the concern, but let's understand what steps and investment we actually need to make to have the right environment for the batteries to live in.
I leave bottled water in my 8x20 shipping container all the time, and when we snowmobile in or come in on ATVs, it is regularly frozen solid.
Okay.
And well,
my shipping container in Kanab, bottled water freezes in the winter.
I
don't know which user suggested the underground storage, but that's a pretty valid way to keep things cool. If we can bury it somehow, like put it down in the ground.
That's going to be a higher cost for us than the other.
Yeah, and I worry about water when it's underground.
Gotcha.
Well, in the ranch house system, there's a whole... The current batteries are in a styrofoam cooler, if you will.
Yeah, like right? It's made out of a little walk-in.
Yeah, I don't know if that's still repurposable for the same reason for these batteries or whether that doesn't apply anymore.
That's a great point. No, I'll bet you we could figure out how to reuse that.
We have about a month before we actually get the batteries to... outfit something for both.
Yeah, so fundamentally I agree. I think we have enough information if we want to take a vote on batteries, notwithstanding the additional research and consideration for environment.
So I propose we buy the batteries.
Which ones? Which ones, outright or the lease? Because there's two different costs. For the lease, okay? I'll second that.
Thomas LeClaire,
all in favor, say aye.
Kevin Poole, aye.
Kate Hoff, aye.
Dan, aye.
Deb Collins, aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Kurt Jacobson, aye. We have agreed unanimously.
Twice in one day.
Very briefly, in the event that we do need to add heat strips, that's something we can do in the future without a major issue, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's not something that needs to be built internally to the unit is my point.
No, we can actually put an external heat source in there. There's plugs in there. We can just plug them in.
Very good. I just don't want to buy equipment and watch it go to pot. That's, you know, not a good plan.
100% agree, Kevin.
And
you know, also, I planted equipment and I didn't grow any pot at all. I don't know.
also, we should plan for adequate ventilation in the summer because those metal containers are probably going to get above the operating temperature in the summer.
You're absolutely spot on.
Yeah, I know Brent's got like a window and stuff in the solar building for the cabin, so I think that one's well ventilated.
Yeah, we just need to get rid of those turbines. Like if we put a turbine on top of the one at headquarters, then you're getting some airflow going in there. That's what Brent and I talked about. And even if you put them on the side, so we're not worried about a leak coming in through the top.
And even like computer fans, 12-volt computer fans can be used for some of those things too.
And we can figure that out. It's kind of a time check. We're at noon. So
Ben, where this puts you from the treasurer's perspective, since we voted yes, go ahead and get them ordered and get an invoice submitted to Abby. And what was our time frame? How far out are we before they get here?
A month. About a month. Yep. We'll put in the order. Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll create an invoice from my LLC to the association. The invoice that you saw was directly from the manufacturer, so it'll just mimic those costs. But I'll separate it out from my company.
Well, then we need the lease. Kurt needs to sign the lease and have that all done up too, right? So
right.
Again, there's just some comments in the chat.
Yeah, I don't know who user is.
I recently thought about EMP issues and the metal boxes, the fires.
Below what he's saying, personal ownership. This is strictly for the cabin, so there's not going to be charges to members other than your annual dues related to that. So that I wonder if that was who left earlier. Put his hand up.
Well, that's a relatively.
Somebody does not want to be charged for the program and the system, and nobody's going to get charged for anything that comes out of the general fund. Wayne Bachman,
209.
Yeah, good point, Wayne. It's just for cabins and headquarters, lower cabins. Eventually, you know, the goal was to also get solar at the upper cabins, and just. A side note, Cabin 7 still, I believe, has its own solar system, which could go to Cabin 4, and it would be easy to link 1, 2, and 3. So, just future thoughts.
And just to be totally clear, Wayne, so, I mean, this is coming out of the association funds, so the $500 a year that you pay every year, it's coming out of that proceeds, but there will not be individual bills to the individual from that perspective.
It's also maintenance and service. This isn't a new investment. This is maintaining and servicing an existing system.
Yeah, every individual has their own is responsible for their own solar systems. Okay, so let's move on to the next item, which is ranch manager replacement. This is a topic for the board to discuss. We need to work on a okay, so for the short term, we have decided Tina Collins is going to do the cabin turnovers to close out the season. And then we're going to hire a new ranch manager in the spring. And during the interim, we need to come up with a rock-solid job description for the ranch manager. It's not at this time, but it's something for us to really start thinking about. And we need to figure it out, preferably by January, so that we can start hitting the – we have a couple of good candidates that I'm not going to get into right now, but – the most important thing is people need to know what the expectation is, and that has been a an issue in the past.
So I sent out the contract that we've used previously with Cody that's been kind of revised and modified. So I don't know that we need the time to go or take the time to go over that contract right now, but that and everybody just froze up on me.
That is something we need to do.
When did you send that, Cade? I didn't get it.
It was sent way back before the other ones, but I can send it again so that we can go over that contract.
If you could send it, I probably have some version of it saved. But if you could send what you're talking about to the board, I would appreciate it.
I'll send it again. So I think we've got two items to do. One, we need to review and finalize that contract. And then two, we need to start posting for the job. It took probably 2 months, 3 months for us to get interviews, get people out here, do all of that kind of fun stuff. And I think it would be good to have somebody not hired like in April, but maybe January time frame, January, February time frame, so they can get familiar with the ranch and stuff that way. But that's just my – so I think we need to determine where we're going to post it. Last time we posted to one paid scenario and one, I think
– KSL was free.
KSL was free, but then the other one we paid for, and then just monitored all of those. And then we conducted several interviews over like a three-week period where we'd meet once a night and do the interviews of the individuals and kind of go through there. We had a lot of applicants, but when it finally came down to it, we only had two people actually, or three people come out to the ranch and actually look at it. So that's going to be our difficulty from that perspective.
Those interviews were done by Zoom?
Correct. Yeah, the full board, whoever was available interviewed them by Zoom.
So I'm only aware of one person so far expressing interest in – I'd appreciate it if, as people express interest, please post those names to the board.
Yeah, I think if we do, somebody's going to have to take responsibility for posting it to the different sites and be the point of contact for those. And then, like you said, Dan, forward them on to the board so that we're aware of the resumes, and then we can start coordinating interviews and stuff that way.
But first, we're going to identify what that job description exactly is.
Yeah, so that's the contract would be the job, and then the job posting to be kind of related to that.
You're going to send that out to us first, right?
Yeah, I'll send you the contract, and I'll try and find the job posting we posted as well, just so we don't have to recreate the wheel, and then we can update or modify those. So I'll send both of those out.
Because some of that stuff, as to Jeff's point earlier, some of the stuff that we're taking on right now is the property manager's responsibility technically, but we still need board involvement. So so interim, Tina's going to be handling the interim turnovers, laundry, interim reservationist is, we've already identified Cade. And Michael, and closing cabins. Tina, and I think a bunch of us are going to pitch in on that too.
Yeah, so Brent did, or Jeff and Brent and Kurt are the three that have kind of volunteered to help close them. So is Brent still willing to do that, Jeff?
Yeah, and he not only that, but he's willing to haul water for the cows after Cody leaves too, if that need is still there too.
Yeah, they're doing Roundup now, so those cows would be gone here shortly.
But we'll want to check with them and make sure how much longer they might need them. But
11:15 is the end of when they're allowed to have cows here.
Gotcha. Okay, well, so he's willing to help haul water too, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we've got everything covered for the ranch management replacement. Do we need to vote on Tina officially in this forum? Michael, what were you thinking?
Yes.
Let's do a vote on Tina. I propose Tina be the closer this year.
I'll second that.
All in favor say aye.
I just want to clarify real quick. So Tina's going to take responsibility for cleaning the comfort stop, doing all of the changeover, cabin turnovers, maintaining all the laundry, and then doing the final close-down cleanup is what we're asking her to do. Is that a correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Storage of linens. Can I add to that possibly an inventory of supplies so that we can get a jump on the order for spring?
There was only one other ad that we did discuss about, and I don't know if Tina's still on, but tracking the hours, time spent, so that we can use that as a number maybe going forward to calculate what does this position do? What is it worth? How much should it really cost?
We've agreed to her the proposed amount, right? But that we asked her to try.
Yeah, but we just need information. That's all. Yeah,
we're agreeing on the amount. That's not it. This is information gathering to hopefully help guide the board in the future as to what does this job take to do.
Tina, do you have any issue with that?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember.
They can't hear.
We can hear her. Yes, we heard her.
I don't know if you remember, so I'll do my best.
Okay, sorry. There was a motion made to approve that, so I say aye. Kate says aye.
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 Michael Jordison, aye.
Dan Wirt, abstain because I don't have enough data to make an actual comparison between Tina Collins and the other person who has expressed an interest.
And I'm going to abstain for conflict of interest.
Kevin Poole, abstain.
Hey, Binks. So the next topic was the other contracts. So we
had the Abby Jones contract. It was a bookkeeper. Tina Collins, water testing. Mark Batista, water operator.
So I sent all those to you guys. Did you guys have any updates, comments, feedback? I haven't reviewed them with any of the members yet.
You know what? Can we table that till next time? I'd like some time to go over those. I have not.
And another issue is that the only indication of compensation is for Tina's contract. The other two have compensation left blank.
Yeah, I haven't filled those out, but I can put those in from – I didn't have a chance to pull them from the current records, but I can do that.
I have two comments on that. One was for venue, if there was a dispute, we've stated Washington County. Is that what we want?
or Kane
County? So that was just from the previous contract, but if we want to put it to Kane County, we can do that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was because of Barry, but normally the venue is where the
deployment is occurring,
Yeah, so the other thing, question maybe for Dan is, what about liability? Should we be asking the contractors to carry their own liability policy?
So we do for the ranch manager. The ranch manager requires a $1,000 policy, but we haven't in the past for these smaller contractors.
I carried my own policy in addition to the ranch policy for when I was there, and it was not very much, like $35-$40 a month.
So risk.
And I was like for $25,000 or $50,000. I don't remember.
Yeah, Thomas, that question arose in my mind, and I didn't come to any solid conclusion about that.
Yeah, so the ranch manager is required to maintain $1 million policy for himself, and then he's also required to cover his subs if he does any sub work from the ranch manager perspective. But these three positions, I took that out just because they're not making enough money really to cover that cost. But I understand why it would be there.
I don't think there's any – what are the possibilities of a liability on those three contracts?
The water tank explodes and Tina dies? I don't know. I mean, there's –
You know, and then we don't have an annual liability waiver process, and the ranch gets sued for a simple accident.
So for clarification, so we're talking about a liability between the contractor and Deer Springs Ranch, or the liability from the contractor and others?
And what?
Other people.
We're talking about the bookkeeper, water testing, and operator. I'm sorry, my point was I don't see where they would need to carry insurance on themselves. I mean, Abby might get a paper cut.
No, the question...
That's kind of what I was trying to get clarification about.
We're talking about an independent... These are independent contractors carrying their own liability insurance, but, you know, like Kate said, they're not getting paid enough to really... I mean, it's a pretty insignificant amount. It's more of a service. Tina does water testing once a month. Abby is the bookkeeper. Bart keeps us legal on the water systems. I don't see why they would need to carry any kind of insurance. That's all I was trying to point out.
Yeah. My number one concern always is to protect the common assets of the ranch. And so what I'm talking about is potential liability for the Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association. In case of some accident, for example, coming down, or as Cade said, the water tank exploding, that the assets of the ranch are protected. This is number one, number one, number one, and number one.
Right. Well, that's kind of where I'm confused. So the contractor wouldn't carry insurance.
The ranch carries it. Michael, what is our policy?
Yeah, our policy is totally inadequate.
Well, that's another discussion. What is it currently?
It is. It's $1 million.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to get some confirmation on it. Yeah.
So I think we can move on
from this because I think we're talking in circles right now.
Well, just so everybody knows what the wording is for the ranch manager. It says the contractor shall provide the company a certificate of insurance for general liability with a minimum of $1 million of coverage. All employees and subcontractors of the contractor shall provide a certificate of insurance for workers' compensation insurance insured for a minimum of $400,000 before commencing work on behalf of the company. So that's what's currently required of the ranch manager. But again, $1 million of coverage is probably going to run in the $1,000 to $2,000 range, and that's more than we're paying some of these people to do stuff. So anyway.
Quite frankly, it's not worth what we're paying the ranch manager either.
Yeah, and this problem could be totally moot and obviated by having members sign a legally competent liability waiver. But that
how does that protect the members from the? I mean,
it protects the common assets of the ranch.
Right, but the contractor is not one of the members. If the contractor gets hurt, then it doesn't protect us from the contractor, is all I'm saying.
Well, yes, it does.
Anyway. Okay, so it's a motion was made to table this until next time. I would second that motion.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now the quick one. last on the list today is Kate Hoff, Ranch House, Garden Cabin Fence.
Well, there's a couple of items over on the next page too, but I'll try and go through these really quick. So we met with Kevin Ballard on the Garden Cabin Fence. His concern is just anytime there's animals in the pens and stuff that way, they could have the potential of getting out. So his recommendation is just to protect the headquarters area. It would be best to replace the fencing that's kind of falling apart and taken down. He did say it's an option to leave it without fencing like it is, but it just is hard to keep the animals out of that area.
Well, are you referring to the in front of the store, or are you referring to back of the ranch house?
Front of the store. Well,
okay.
So all of the stuff in front of the store, by the playground, all of that would need to be replaced.
That was something else that I wanted to do over the years, and it was previously done with ponderosa and untreated posts, and it rotted way too prematurely. And my recommendation was to make something out of juniper, which is more attractive but does require some maintenance. Or we can soak ponderosa posts in oil, which we have a barrel of, used oil by the tack room.
Yeah.
But, that fence needs to be replaced because there is a danger of animals getting out and in that way.
Well, so most of the time, like when they're actually doing the runs, they try and keep them in that new run that was created for them.
Right.
But there's the chance that they can get out. So
yes.
He was requesting that it be done and would be willing to help out with it a little bit. It kind of goes on to with the irrigation with the 40,000-gallon tank. He's looking to try and get NCRS funds to help out with water and different things that way, but we have to have basic irrigation there. So then this also ties into his upcoming renewal of his contract and stuff. He's willing to do more and help out the ranch more if we're willing to extend out his contract. So I don't know that these need to be decided ASAP today, but they're items that we need to be thinking about and coming up with plans on how we're going to facilitate or use those, and they're all kind of tied to the cattle lease and that agreement and maybe renewing that. So I don't know if you guys want to discuss it more today or table it and get more information on the lease and bring that up next time. But I mean, each time we push it off, we're going to have to spend time in the next meeting for it. But
well, my understanding is that the cattle lease is up in November of
27.
I think it's 26.
The Kevin Ballard needs to come to a meeting and a board meeting and speak for himself. And
he said he was willing to do that.
Yeah. He's got plans, he's got ideas, and right now he's in a conundrum. Sooner than later is better because he has some more NCRS projects he wants to do, but with the government shut down, we don't know what the heck's going on. So Somewhere we do need to spend some time with him, and he can give us some ideas of what he wants to do and the lease term that he's looking for in exchange for what he's willing to do.
The immediate discussion is fence in front of the comfort stop. Abe, do we have a dollar amount, someone willing to do it? We can't vote on anything without a formal proposal of who's going to do it, what are we using?
I think the first question, I think some people feel like we don't need to replace that fence, that it's an extra expense we don't need at this point. So do we even want to do it? And if so, then I can look into estimates and stuff that way. But if we don't feel like it's a need, then I don't even know that we want to spend the time putting this estimate together.
Well, it's just a matter of weighing, do we want cows in the yard of the headquarters? We've had problems in the past. We fixed all those problems in my second year, and then now that fence is gone, and that pretty much leaves it open. And when we have meetings and when we have gatherings and we got cow poop everywhere, it's not real desirable.
Well, they could also be having stuff back in there, but
yeah, they like to chew on. For some reason, they like to chew on electrical wires. Brent's rewired that backup generator twice, and then we built a better fence around there.
Well, the way I understood it when we met with Kevin was that it's likely not even going to be an occurrence. It's just a safety measure. So do we incur the expense, the ongoing maintenance, all those things for a possible, because of the new chase, they're running the cows differently. So they're not running them right in front of headquarters anymore and all those kinds of things. Or should we focus, instead of focusing on the fence there, do we focus more on getting the corrals cleaned up so the cows aren't getting out?
Well, I think that's a great point, and we need to have a discussion about that, and we need to have Kevin in that discussion.
Okay, so I'll make a motion to table all of the stuff associated with the lease and stuff until our next meeting.
We're getting our feet under us right now, so... I think if we're trying to take on so much stuff right now, it's better that we learn to work together, and we're going to serve the membership more effectively.
Everybody, is anybody second that motion to table this?
I second to table.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, moving on. I got another item on the new email for water results. So Tina has indicated that there's been a little bit of delay in the water results. I don't know if it would make sense to make a new email address. I think there'd be a cost involved with that. Maybe this is a question for Abby and Michael, since you guys kind of set it up. Would it be possible just to set up a rule that auto emails the water committee when that and the board when the water results come in? We just want to make sure that gets forwarded on a timely manner to Tina so that she can, if there's an action that needs to be taken, she can go ahead and take that action.
I don't think we can set up maybe there's a way to set up a rule in GoDaddy to anything from this address, and we can look at it. I don't know that GoDaddy will have that feature.
But are we using Outlook or something else to kind of monitor it, or?
I honestly don't know how bookkeeping is monitoring. I generally log into GoDaddy directly, which makes sure it's not on my system, because it's not my information. If you log in using Outlook, you're bringing that information down to your local computer. Right. Where Abby has a ranch computer, a ranch asset, that's not a big deal. I guess it's up to us. I think it's like $5.99 a month or $4.99 a month to add another email. I mean, it's not a big expense, but it is an expense.
Well, if we can forward it, I would like to forward it. So is that something you and Abby can just look at, seeing if we can forward it? Because that seems like it would be easier to maintain, and then rather than and less expensive, right?
Yes, I will get with Abby and see if we can forward that.
Is everybody okay with that, or do you guys want to incur the expense?
We're okay with having Michael look at that. Cade, what do you got on the ponds?
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about those after Brent and both Larry and Brent, and then I think Dan's driven around and looked at the ponds, and now might be a good time to dig them up, you know, get rid of some of the growth that's out there. I don't know if it'll be easier to get mowers and stuff down there with it being as dry as it is. We could at least get, you know, skid steers and stuff down there, so I don't know if there's any action we wanted to take while it's all dry.
It's not dry anymore.
Yeah.
So is this the section between pond one and pond two that we're talking about with all the willows?
No, I think all the willows are actually between pond one and the spring. That's where the main willows are. But I do think pond one and two, surrounding them, there's some willows and stuff too, and growth that can maybe be gotten out of there now that, you know, the water's not right up to the edge of them.
Well, I mean, there are willows everywhere. There are also lots of willows between two and three. But I'm not. It's my impression is that Larry believes that the chief problem is not the willows. It's just the very dry conditions recharging the water table.
Well, the willows have always been there.
Well, they've been partially mowed before. But when we were trekking around the wet meadow, where there is one major spring that's, you know, fenced in, and several smaller springs going all the way down south. There's evidence that they're simply that their flow is substantially decreased, and probably not due to willows.
So my point wasn't necessarily to do anything with them, just to solve the water problem, because I agree with Dan. I don't think that the willows are causing necessarily all of the problem. But with things being as low as they are, is now a time that we want to do some maintenance on the ponds and or including the willows. We may not have the equipment to do it either. It sounds like our...
Well, Larry can take his excavator down there, the big one. And he did that a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I think, or four, and right. He cleaned them out.
It was a long reach.
Pond one, but he didn't do any more than pond one.
That was a long reach excavator that came in from someone else.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Larry's, okay. Yeah.
I think Larry is, you know, as is typical, really quite busy.
Yeah, and just threw it out there as an option to, if we want to even investigate. If not, then I just wanted to throw it out there.
Okay. Fire restriction notice, Dan?
Yeah. Should we table that until the next meeting, or should we continue?
I think we can table it, Dan, and we're past the fire season, so we can table it to whenever you want to do it. We have a fire warden member presentation November 8th.
Yes.
Our next meeting.
Okay. Right.
And he's willing to come in person. This is the Kane County Fire Warden, Alexander Larson. He's willing to come in person, you know, weather permitting, and also the possibility that he could be called away elsewhere out of Kane County for fire help. But if the weather doesn't permit and the next meeting is by Zoom, you know, perhaps he could appear by Zoom also.
Yeah, we've done that with a fire warden before.
So... incidentally, there's been, I think we should table this, because it's going to take me, 10 or 15 minutes to go through what I've learned about the fire restrictions and how they apply to Deer Springs Ranch and the fire risks there, which Mr. Larson characterizes as one of the two most dangerous spots in Kane County. In other words, Deer Springs Ranch, one of the two. And then there are fire pit issues and uncertainties that need to be addressed, perhaps now somewhat of less urgency because we're, the weather is changing. But
I'll second your motion to table it if you want.
Yeah. One other comment is that Mr. Larson is the Kane County Fire Warden, but he is not a Kane County employee. He is an employee of the Division of Natural Resources. He's a state employee. Each county has a fire warden. So I move that we table the fire restriction a discussion until the next board meeting, but I would request that it appear near the top of the next agenda so that we can actually get to it.
Okay, and so let's put fire district participation in that same one. Does that sound good to you, Dan?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
there's no urgency to address that right now.
Second motion.
All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
Aye.
We agreed again. Brief report of areas of responsibility. I think
I don't have anything else to add. Do we just want to see if anybody else has anything to add on there?
Yeah, does anybody have anything to add? That's kind of way to go.
Yes, I do.
Okay, Mike.
Meeting, we have to have our budget completed and finalized, voted on, and distributed to the members so that they have their 45 days to contest it if they so choose. Meeting on the 8th will be quite a bit about the budget. And I also would like any members or any board members, if you have specific projects or items that you would like to see budgeted out, obviously I can't guarantee that every one of them will be met, but at least if you would send me what you've got, we can get a list together and start prioritizing and go from there.
By send you, you mean send to the board?
Yes, to the board email address. Yes. Right.
Not you personally?
Not me personally, no. I mean, I will put together a budget to present to everybody. I mean, that is my job. But, yes, the proposed items, and we'll discuss them. I won't be choosing what items to put on the, of these special projects. That's for the board to decide.
Yeah, generically, when we say we'll send me, I think we were all referring to the board email, Dan.
Yeah.
Even that letter or that verbiage you wanted included, if you'll send that to the board email, too, that would be great.
Michael, what's the drop dead for sending that out to the membership in advance of the next meeting?
What specifically are you talking about?
The budget.
The budget.
I think the budget just has to go out the normal 2 days, 3 days before, whatever it is.
48 hours.
It isn't a 14-day. It isn't one of the 14-day items.
There's a drop dead for us to get it and then actually send the bill. It's 45 days before the bill was sent out.
Yes.
Do you know what date that is?
November 15th. We have to be done and approved by November 15th. Because our our budget cycle is from January to December 31st, so we have to give them 45 days
to contest it.
From the time we approve it, a minimum of 45 days from the time we approve it to when we spend dollars on that next budget cycle.
Okay. So if you got anything for Michael, get it to him, preferably in the next week or so, so he has time to work on things.
Please.
The corral might be one of those subjects. A fence in front of the store might be one of those subjects. So let's get that to him. Actions taken without a meeting. Email approved since last agenda. Cody's last payment. Cody will be paid through October 12th, and no further work is expected. Extend closing to cabin 9 and 10 to allow cabins to be rented through the 18th. Allow fire mitigation evaluation on lot 1. Approve. Kurt signed the DNR permission to enter premises and to perform evaluation electronically. Testing upper cabin water system after 2 failures approved. Cleaning Johnny Brown cattle guard. Larry Clarkson will do for $500. I believe he's already done that.
Yes.
Email to current reservations regarding power instability of lower cabins. Kate took care of that. And fire warden visit is next month. And our next meeting is November the 8th at, I'm going to say 9 o'clock. We have the executive, 10 o'clock. We have the general meeting.
Can I make a proposal on that?
Yeah.
What if... I don't know how the members feel, but what if we started at 9 o'clock just with the general member meeting, and then if we need an executive meeting, have that afterwards?
You know what? That's perfect. Yeah, we did discuss that. I think that's a great idea.
Well,
we're going to vote on that.
Agree.
I'll second you on that. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Did the rest of the board hear what I proposed?
I did not.
Okay, so the proposal. Go ahead, Kevin or Kurt.
To have the executive meeting, if we need one after the meeting, that way everything's fresh in our brains. And if we don't have executive stuff under the executive law, then we don't have an executive meeting on those days. So we're proposing that we do the executive meeting. We do the regular meeting at 9 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock. And then if we have to have an executive meeting, we do it after the meeting.
I would think that's kind of backwards considering we have contracts to consider.
Well, the contracts themselves could be discussed in the actual meeting. We don't, there's nothing, we're not deciding between contracts or other items that way in the executive meeting, this upcoming one.
We can, as a board, we can discuss even through the email, through the board email, back and forth, and we can finalize these contracts. We just cannot vote on them until they are in front of. And if there are questions or discussions that need to be had, those need to be had during this meeting. But it's within the normal course of business to, for us to articulate what those contracts are and then present them.
So as you guys read through them and stuff that way, you can respond by email and say, hey, I recommend this change or recommend that change. And then next time we can send them out again and go from that perspective. So but the proposal is to start at 9 a.m. with our normal business. That way, if we get done earlier, you know, the rest of your day is still available to you. But if we need to close the meeting for executive discussions, we can close it and let everybody go and do the executive meeting. But
that's how I look at this, is if something comes up during the normal course of our board meeting that requires an executive session, that's when we need to break away and have that session.
I think that's a great idea.
So the motion's been made and seconded. I'm in favor of doing that.
Aye.
Michael Jordison, aye.
Thomas, aye.
Can't hear you, Kevin. Or Jeff, sorry.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes, gotcha. Kevin and Dan.
Abstain.
Yeah, I'll abstain also.
Okay. So next meeting will be on the 8th at 9 a.m. Okay, I make a motion that we close the meeting. Adjourn.
I'll second it.
We're adjourned.